Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the Toy Department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, it is time for the Tuesday edition of the Toy Department. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. And I guess we should start with some admin this week, right?
A little bit of admin.
We should let people know.
Yeah, a little bit of scorekeeping.
Yeah, we're gonna be off next week, so no homework as of yet. We may pop up at some point online and tell you some things that we're going to talk about in the next pod, but there won't be a pod next week.
Correct.
Got
zero pods. There's still a pod Thursday, still two pods this week, zero pods next week. It's a dark week for the toy department.
I also have an announcement to make. We have not discussed this.
Oh.
I guess
since you put it in those terms, I should say it's my fault we're going dark next week, and no, I will not tell you why. Go ahead.
Fair enough. I think this is going to be controversial. I have a feeling you're not going to like it.
Uh-oh.
But here I am. I'm saying it. I'm opting out of Last Chance Kitchen. I don't care.
Wow.
That's it. I didn't watch this week, and I don't know that I'm going to watch it ever again.
Wow. You know, my mom has
That's
the same
my
problem. My parents are in town, so my wife and I watched Top Chef with my mom this week. And when it ended, I don't know if it's the same problem, but she expressed much of your frustration and confusion surrounding where and how to watch Last Chance Kitchen. And she is not a DirecTV subscriber. She is, you know, in her mid-60s. But, you know, you're not the only one, I guess is what I'm saying. There's probably a nation of people in the senior bracket who are right there with you.
I realize that is somewhat of a senior position. But it's not, you know, it's not just that they don't make it that easily available, which I just don't understand. Like, I get it if you're on Hulu and you don't want to have the new episodes up, but at least put your online-only content on the streaming platforms. But
I guarantee that's not Hulu's choice.
It's just not that – right, that's what I mean. It's Bravo's choice or Top Chef's choice,
right.
You know, whoever. And it's a dumb choice. Like, give you easy access to your content. You know what I mean? Like, that's what media is. We work in media. We know this.
Well, except, you know, we work in media, so we also know that, and this is probably a conversation for a different off-air pod that's already happened, but this is not an industry. Despite all of the streaming stuff, and the apparent success of streaming as a broad macro venture, the industry has not monetized that stuff very well. So everyone still feels like, well, we got to hold on to our streaming stuff to monetize it the right way. And I think that's what's happening here.
Yeah, maybe that's it. But the thing that I wanted to point out is that it's not just an access thing for me. It's just not worth it.
Why? Like, it's like a fun bonus quickfire. I don't know why I don't like it.
Right,
I like it.
It's like a little it's a goofy quickfire where they I don't know. I just don't enjoy it that much.
Derek, don't you like quickfire challenges?
I do sometimes, but I like them with all the people and going around and seeing all the things, and it's like I don't know.
I don't know.
It's not worth it to me.
Okay. So
me who wins. I'm interested in who wins and who comes back, and that's it.
You sound to me like kind of a, how do I put this? Like someone, I don't know what the word for this is, but like it sounds to me as though your frustration and the deep insecurity you feel from your struggles to access Last Chance Kitchen have now bled into your
experience
of watching Last Chance Kitchen, because I see it totally the other way. Like, it's a goofy little quickfire of like a one-on-one battle, but to me that's an exciting little twist to get to see each week. It's as if each episode were, you know, an hour without commercials instead of 42 minutes. Thanks.
I just find myself not paying attention to them by the end.
It's almost like the elimination at the end of a challenge.
And it's like, it's not that long. So, you know?
Yeah,
like
I don't know.
You can't hold me for 10 minutes.
I like it. Agree to disagree.
Yeah.
I'm a Last Chance Kitchen fan.
I'm all, like, I'm all for you watching it, but I'm not accepting Last Chance Kitchen as canon. You know what I mean?
All right. Like, well, Sasha lost.
All right, great.
It was close, though. They both did really well. And I believe it was like there was one little I can't remember exactly what it was, but there was one little mistake where Tom was like, look, these are both great. I just picked the one little mistake I could find with the one, and you got to go. Bye, Sasha.
So let's talk about Kiki then.
Yep. Who, of course, was eliminated from the main Top Chef and won Last Chance Kitchen this week.
Right, correct. Sorry. If you also didn't watch Last Chance Kitchen or this episode, you probably filled in on that. You know, because obviously she came in, I think, fairly heralded as a chef and just didn't cook very well on the show. Right.
Yeah.
Like, isn't this made some real, like, pretty fairly elementary mistakes. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Isn't this kind of like if you had a really incredible actor or musician who was just not an improviser, and you put them in an improvisational space? They would look clueless in a way that didn't make sense, right? Like, that's the feeling I get watching her is like, and she said as much, you know, she talked about like, in my restaurants, I build dishes over months, you know, it's R&D.
Yeah.
Yes. And I think that, like, that's a question of style, not quality.
Yeah, I also think that's, you know, she talked about, you know, her experience in the kitchen and cooking for other people and, you know, and wanting to do things for herself. But I don't know, at least in the context of this show, if she quite knew what she wanted to say. And you know, it does sort of remind me of like an Obi Toppin or something, like a heralded rookie prospect who just hasn't quite figured out how to play the game at that level yet. You know what I mean? And
right.
maybe might still be a great player someday. Or, you know, maybe just isn't cut out for this competition. Like, I'd still be very interested to go to Detroit and eating her restaurant food.
Yes. Well, I mean, that's the thing. I don't know. You're right. I mean this sincerely. I don't know if that's the sort of, if like freestyle cooking, for lack of a better description, is the sort of thing that you can, like, is that, you know, a gift or a learned skill? It's probably a little of both, but it doesn't make me doubt, like you said, her, like, how good her restaurant is. I'm pretty low on her ability to fully bounce back in Last Chance Kitchen and get back into this thing, because I just think, you know, over time, like, one day she's going to get a challenge in there that doesn't suit her particularly well, and whether she's able to adjust, I don't know. I just don't think she is. And she's really had struggles with the time. Like, that seems to just be such an obstacle for some people that, like, every single thing, something ends up undercooked or done wrong. Like, okay, the mistake she made, right? Like, Kiki got sent home because she served raw chicken. Okay? You serve raw chicken, like, unless someone else puts arsenic in their dish, you're probably going home. And the reason she served raw chicken is because this is too dumb to even be called a classic mistake. Like, you must not watch Top Chef, okay? Because if you watch Top Chef, you would not do this. She's got a tiny fryer outside making 10 pieces of fried chicken or whatever it is, and she did a test run, which sounds like a good idea until you think about the cooling of the oil that happens when you start putting chicken in it, and she clearly cooled the oil for the batch she actually gave to the judges.
Yeah.
Like,
I don't want to say
you're outside with a fryer. You can't do that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I think, like, you know, I also think Tom really got in her head.
Yes. And just, sorry, quickly, before you say your whole point, just to add on to what I'm saying, like, that stuff that I just said, I sound like I'm being a dick, because anyone who has watched Top Chef for the last, say, 5 years knows what I just said. So, like, it's kind of just the level of not knowing the competition mistake that makes me wonder if she's ever going to figure that out.
Yeah, I kind of suspect this season has a lot of people who maybe have not watched the show as much, right? Because
they have successful chef lives that
right,
totally.
That prevent them from doing that. And then this season they were available. So now they're here.
I mean, you're right, but I know it from watching Top Chef. She should know it from being a chef if she had the ability to work in, you know, weird environments, which is really what Top Chef is the biggest test of.
And there's nothing we've seen that would suggest that, like, she's going to put it together right now and go on the kind of Last Chance Kitchen run, right? She'd probably need to beat 7 or 8 people in a row, right, to get back.
Yeah, something like that. I guess we don't know, right?
Yeah.
It varies. But, yeah, I think probably 5, 6, 7 more people.
Yeah. Unless it's four or five, I just don't see that kind of run coming out of her.
No, agreed. But remember, like, was it last year in the All-Stars, they did like a mid-season comeback and an end-of-season comeback, so you never know.
Yeah, you know, right, it's true. They may have more than one chance to get back in the competition. That is the Last Chance Kitchen thing is it's the one place where they get to be a little challenged. You know, and where they can just kind of
change the rules midstream
and no one seems to really care.
Yeah, you know? Except that friggin' Tom went full challenge in, like, episode 2 with the now you're partnered up bit.
Yeah.
So who knows? Maybe Top Chef's really trying to push the envelope.
It's true. And really, if you think about it, there was a little bit of that this week, too, with the, like, oh, by the way, you don't get any vegetables.
Yeah. No veggies, folks.
So...
And, you know, let's talk about that quickly, because it was Gabe, right? Gabe was sort of the only person who took that challenge head on, you know? Like, everyone else was like, oh, I'll just make a normal dish, but I'll try to, like, do it without vegetables and see how that works. And Gabe was like, hell, man, if they want it to be about fruit, let's make it about fruit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that was really smart. And also, he is definitely distinguishing himself as, you know, I don't know if he's the favorite. He's certainly among the favorites, but he's definitely the guy who is, like, the most self-assured and understands what he's trying to do and say at all times. And it may not be complicated, but it doesn't have to be.
Yeah, I mean, I think he and Chota are kind of on sort of parallel tracks where they have this really defined point of view.
That's right.
That they are able to graft onto seemingly any challenge. And you know, it seems to me, you know, you might disagree, but I think that there are right now there's a tier of four chefs that have separated themselves. Chota,
those two, Dawn,
Sarah, and the two. Oh, you know what? I guess you could have Dawn in that group. I guess you can have Dawn in that group, but I have the two Gabes. In there.
Well, Gabe was one of the two we started talking about.
Yes. Yes.
So if it's four, that's including Dawn?
It was not including Dawn, but you could. I think you can make an argument.
So who's the fourth then?
Both Gabes. The two Gabes.
I know, but we already had one Gabe. It's Chota, Gabe, Gabriel, and who?
Sarah.
Oh, Sarah. Yes. Yeah, and I would put Dawn in that. I would make it a fivesome. and put Dawn in that as well. But yeah, I do think Dawn, it would be fair not to put her in there because the first couple episodes she was sort of running out of time and I think trying to find her way on the TV show part of it. But I do think she has a very defined point of view, and she's certainly capable of greatness in this season. We've seen that.
Yeah. Like, she's sort of the – you can leave her in, leave her out for me, I think, for exactly the reasons that you said. Like, I would also say, like, if you leave her out, it's very clear that she could – episode or two. You know what I mean? So
– yeah. Yeah, she's close. So
she's extremely talented.
I agree. And I got to say, my guy Chris, who, like, as we pressed play on the episode, I was like, oh, yeah, Chris, he's the worst guy here. He's terrible. He really had a good episode, man.
Sure did. He showed up. I don't know if that's a lasting thing, like if this was I found my voice by simplifying it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, he made a grilled cheese. He made a really awesome grilled cheese, clearly. But, like, he made a grilled cheese. So I don't know how sustainable that is. You know,
well,
I mean, obviously, that was the only thing he did. He did it on the Elimination Challenge, too.
But I think it's there's two sides to that, right? On one hand, you made a grilled cheese. You probably didn't find yourself, per se. On the other hand, like, winning with a grilled cheese can be a powerful lesson.
Right? Yeah, no, I mean, and he said as much, right?
Yeah.
Like, just simplify it and you know.
Well,
yeah,
like,
you're doing
I
too much.
Yeah, I think there's a temptation, understandably, especially, like, when you first arrive, to, like, blow people's minds. And I think it's sort of like the thing about, you know, sports teams getting a big lead and then changing what they do. And I think specifically with Top Chef, it's like it's sometimes hard to forget that, like, getting on Top Chef is the big lead. So you don't get on Top Chef and then, like, start swinging for the fences in a way you don't normally swing for the fences, right? You get on Top Chef, and then you do what you did to get yourself there.
Yep. I think there may be a point sometimes on a season of Top Chef where you do need to swing for the fences.
Yeah, but that's later.
It's well into the competition.
Totally.
I mean,
like, the key at first, and it's not just from the perspective of, like, the best way to stay alive, but the best way to, like, lock yourself in as a contender with the judges. Because I think, you know, like any season-long thing, that narrative is important. I think the biggest thing to do is just, like, really classy, high-quality stuff that's in your wheelhouse, honestly. Like, that's the best way to get yourself rolling on the show. Then when you're comfortable and you're cruising and you know, you've been in the top three a couple times, then you take some big cuts.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And to that end, I think Shota and Sarah both had the kind of off weeks that people who win this competition have this week, if that makes sense. You know
100%.
What I mean? 100%. Like, not their best effort, but easily landing them squarely in the middle.
Right. And, you never had any concern about them actually going home, even though neither of them cooked to their own standards.
Correct. And that's and you know, go back to live to fight another day.
Yep.
So yeah, like, to me, there's a very real separation between that group and the others, and we'll see if any of them can kind of close that gap over the coming weeks.
Yeah, on the other side of things, you know, Kiki obviously was eliminated. My guy Nelson is so far up in his own head.
Yeah.
Like, he's just not, and he said it, he knows, but, like, he just can't find himself in this mess. And what's interesting is that at the very beginning, it seemed like he really understood himself, but I think the way that they talked about his food gave him some doubts, and so I think he's like searching right now. Like, you know, it's like when a good basketball player is just on a tough streak with his jumper, you know, and you just see him, like, searching, just like, why isn't this working? Gee, I remember Clay started the season on a terrible downstream, and he would take these shots where it's like, oh, that's Clay, that's good. And it'd be way off, and you could see the expression on his face, like, what is happening? I don't even understand how this isn't working for me right now. And that's where I feel like Nelson's at.
Yeah, and it's starting to show up where there's some elementary mistakes being made now too. You know what I mean? And they just really have not liked anything he's put out lately.
And you could see like the way they talked about this last one is like a collection of ingredients and like what are you actually doing here? And he was like, "Yeah, I don't know, man. I'm in my own head."
Yeah, yeah. So I hope he figures it out soon. I was very worried when they showed his family.
yes. You know,
but fortunately, they were doing that for everybody.
Yeah.
Gabe got that right off the bat, right? They got the phone call to the kids. I was like, oh, no, Gabe.
Totally. I had the exact same experience. Like, oh, no, already? Poor Gabe. But then he was great. He's a weird one, but he's growing on me.
Yeah. Yeah. He's that whole phone call with his kids was pretty adorable. So,
yeah, like, yeah. He's got a very cute family, and he's odd. Like that jacket he wears is bizarre. My wife is obsessed / repulsed by the jacket.
Well, I will certainly be in Austin, Texas again at some point in my life, so I'm definitely going to eat that man's food.
Yeah,
at some point.
I'd like to hear about it. And Roscoe's down there too. While you're at it, right?
Oh, is it? I thought that was in Alabama for some reason.
Oh, is it? I don't know. He's a pitmaster somewhere.
But I could be wrong about that. Like, you know, you could be right. You could be a pitmaster in Texas. You could be a pitmaster in Kansas City. You could be a pitmaster in Alabama. So who knows?
Roscoe Hall. Oh, he just left. Huh.
Rodney Scott's, right, was the place that he was.
Yeah, but apparently he left Rodney Scott's. Roscoe has left his position at Rodney Scott's barbecue. Says he's working with one of his best friends making pizza.
Man, that guy's just—he's doing it all.
Weird guy. Weird guy.
He wears many hats. That guy.
Yep. That's sad. We didn't get to see more of him.
Yes. I thought the sponsorship was really aggressive this week.
Yep. Although it made me think, like, do you have Campbell's in your cupboard?
I do not. For many, many years that would have been absolutely true for me, but
not
I
not even like a condensed cream of mushroom for cooking.
I kinda graduated from to a little bit more complex jarred soups.
Oh, wow. In my cupboard. Look at you.
You know what I mean?
Okay. All right. You're a real grown up. I mean, God.
Yeah. So I wouldn't get the Campbell's.
Okay. But I do think Campbell's has got to be one of the most ubiquitous brands in the country, right?
Oh, yeah. For sure.
Like, it did make me think, like, wow. Yeah. Campbell's probably is in, like, what? 65% of cupboards in America? Minimum?
Yeah. It's not like Kleenex where the brand name has sort of become the category.
No.
But it's that same level of market domination almost. Yes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's right. Where it's like there's Campbell's and then there's knockoffs from, you know, individual stores. And I guess Progresso's out there somewhere. And then there's like the fancy soups that you're talking about. But like Campbell's is, you know, one of two recognizable brands in the market and definitely beating Progresso.
Yeah. And the Campbell's owns a lot of, like, you know, like if you're like, well, I like chunky soups, like that's Campbell's too. You know
it's
what
all,
I mean?
Right. So. Yeah. Right.
Like they, you know, a lot of their other kind of off branches are popular as well. So
weird twist. Yeah. And this has nothing to do with what we're talking about other than that it's vaguely food and brand related. We were watching some Jeopardy yesterday as a family. My parents seemed blissfully unaware of Mr. Pibb.
Oh, that it existed?
Well, I think like my mom seemed like she was aware that it existed, but she had never seen it or tasted it. I believe it's Coca-Cola's answer to Dr. Pepper, or it's Pepsi's, whichever. You know, doesn't have original Dr. Pepper. But that's what you just made me think of is like, you know.
Neither one does that, by the way. It's Dr. Pepper is independent.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
I wanna, like, I'm not completely independent. I think it's connected with some other beverages, but I believe it's neither Coke nor Pepsi.
Really?
Pretty sure.
I think it's Snapple.
Yeah, that might be right.
Dr. Pepper's Snapple Group. Hilarious.
Yeah.
So Mr. Pibb is Coca-Cola's answer to Dr. Pepper. And it's one of those things, right, where I guess in this case, if you want to throw Snapple in there, it's three companies. Like, there's 1,000 fancy soda brands, but they're all owned by the same people.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Anyway, that was a long way to get to that point.
Cokes and all kind of beverages, for sure. Yeah. But it wasn't – I didn't think it was just the Campbell's, although it was, you know, obviously they went in heavy on the Campbell's. You know, the Beamers were out in force.
The Beamers have been really in your face this year. Like, they did, like, a whole little remote start commercial in one of the episodes. Someone was like, hey, check this out, and, like, press the remote start button. Congratulations, you guys.
Yeah.
I just – you know, that stuff doesn't really bother me. But I do wonder when I see that, what do we think the real effect of that is? Do you think they sell a single additional Beamer by having the top chefs drive around in three red BMW station wagons?
I do. Yeah.
I guess I just don't understand. And I think, you know, it's probably more like holistic than what I'm saying, right? I mean, the approach of awareness marketing is sort of an overall holistic approach that, like, by being around, we get in your head as you know, an identity that we design, sort of thing. But
yeah, and you get to see, right, like, when you see a BMW commercial, it's going to be somebody, like, you're going to see a car speeding along a fancy road. Right, you know what I mean, and it's 15.
I guess
to 30
what I'm
seconds.
Saying is, like,
this is like real use. You know what I mean? Like,
it's a different context.
Like,
but describe to me the, like, previous Mercedes customer who sees the remote start and is like, oh damn, they got remote start at BMW. Like, they got it at Mercedes.
Yeah,
I don't think
it works like that. It's just kind of like, it's like over the course of the season, you're watching, and you're like, oh yeah, that Beamer's kind of cool. And then when you're making your next purchase, right? Like, then it's sort of
you
like,
think, oh man,
you just
that
have
Beamer
the feeling about the Beamer,
cool.
Right? Like,
right.
You're not even necessarily connecting it.
Well, that's
to
what I'm
chef.
Saying. Like, yeah. The way this marketing is supposed to work is it, like, insinuates itself into your head over time. And I guess that probably works. They probably know what they're doing, but it just all seems like a weird business.
I mean,
model
I think it's
me.
Really helped Whole Foods, right? Where you're like, oh, I can go to this place and get all of these chefy quality ingredients that I can make meals
really?
At home with.
I mean,
right?
How many people watch Top Chef? You really think that's had any effect on the broader business of Whole Foods?
I do. I do. And I mean, I'm not saying like, well, our sales are up 78% since, you know what I mean? But I would, the way, that, you know what I mean? Like, the way that I would, the proof that I would give to you is that we're in what, like season 17, 18 of this show?
18, I think.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, and at Whole Foods, they've been at Whole Foods just about every year, right? Even this year where they're clearly getting less bang for their buck because they can't go to the store. You know what I mean? Like, they keep
online.
Coming back.
Yeah.
They wouldn't be doing that if they didn't feel like there was a real benefit to their business. You know what I mean?
Well,
Whole Foods has exploded as a business over the course of this show, which I'm obviously not putting to the show.
Right.
But, you know what I mean? I it doesn't hurt. That's all I'm saying. It's good branding.
I mean, it's an interesting thing. I don't know what. I mean, this is not me saying I'm doubting. I don't know what the real effect of that is. It'd be interesting. I'm sure they have numbers and research on that.
Yeah. Have you noticed that Kwame's been really going for it with the outfits this year?
I don't remember him from his season. So is that different than normal? Because yeah, it seems
normal to me.
He and Gregory both have incredibly unique but defined senses of style.
Yeah. Yeah, Kwame's is just a little louder than Gregory's is, I think.
A little louder, but Gregory.
A little louder.
Gregory went like leopard print last week, I think, right? Like he's not messing around either.
Yeah, just a little louder.
Kwame's is I think it's because it's like Kwame is a little like starker in his presentation, if that makes sense.
Yep.
Like Gregory has some flourishes here and there, and some very like new agey fits to his pants and whatnot, but like it does, it's not as like Kwame's like gigantic jacket, you know. It's like sort of unmissable fashion statements.
Yeah, exactly. Gigantic, like, lime-colored jacket. You know what I mean?
Have you noticed how many people on various things, I know you watch the Oscars, have painted their nails black? Is that like a...
Yeah, I think that's a thing that's happening.
Is it a Black Lives Matter thing?
I don't think that's a thing. I think it's just a trend, but I, you know.
Oh, you think it's just you think it's just like a fashion trend?
Yeah. But I don't necessarily have my finger on that pulse.
Or your fingernail.
Or my fingernail. Hey. But yeah. But I will say, Lakeith Stanfield, who's playing Kwame in a movie soon. I'm starting to see how that makes sense. And also, I don't know if you saw what that dude wore to the Oscars, but man, that was the suit of the night for sure. It was like a 70s jumpsuit kind of with this like white collar and sunglasses.
Wait,
yeah.
You're talking about Lakeith?
Talking about Lakeith, yeah.
Yeah, he looked incredible, but I didn't think he had the suit of the night.
Oh, you didn't?
No.
Who'd you give that to?
Trayvon.
Really? Yeah.
Come on, that gold number, and his buddy had the gold pant. Like the whole, they were matching. They won an Oscar. They were matching, and it was like, I mean, that was, they went big.
Yeah, I mean, I like Trayvon. Not close to me.
Wow. Okay. I mean, look, yeah. No shade to Lakeith, who also looked incredible and was definitely going like 70s pimp as his style icon. And I respect that, but I thought the coordination and the like when dressing up like that to go to an Oscars where you're nominated is a little bit of a flex. Like that's a little bit of Tiger wearing red on Sunday. Like, except they don't have any Oscars already.
Yeah, you true. Know, somebody else also went head to toe gold. So I guess somebody, and I don't think one actually.
I didn't see that. I didn't notice that. But also, I mean, did you ever watch Two Distant Strangers?
I did not. No.
Oh wow. Whenever we reconvene, which right now is you know two weeks from now in all likelihood, possibly three. Watch that. It's 30 minutes or whatever. Let's talk about that because I didn't see many of the short films it was nominated with, but I'm not surprised it was better than them. It's really, I mean, it's as good a short film as I've ever seen.
It looked good from the brief clips.
I mean, it's funny. It's deep. It's emotional. It has, like, it's both gut punching and also, like, you know, interestingly hopeful. It's well acted. It's well written. The concept is not on in the, I mean, totally different feel and type of film, but the much like Palm Springs, it finds a way to make a pretty well-used trope feel totally original.
Mm. I will. I have to figure out where I can watch it, but
it's on Netflix.
It is great.
Yeah. Yep.
I'll check it out.
It's an easy 30-minute watch on Netflix, and Joey Badass is going to be a big-time dual threat guy. He can really act.
I think there is a real conversation to be had about like the Oscars and what it's going to mean and what it's going to look like going forward. Hopefully next year, regardless of what happens, they'll include clips of the movies.
Yeah. Well, there were some clips, but it felt like they deliberately cut clips up in a way so as to make them like have as little to do with the movie as possible, even though they were clips from the movie.
Yeah. and this was the year where you needed more context for the movies, not less, because nobody saw the movies. Yeah, but
they made them. Did you notice they made all of the Best Pictures silent films?
I did not notice that.
Like, they somehow managed, I think it was, or maybe it wasn't the Best Pictures. Maybe it was like the editing category or something. But there was one category where I was like, because I didn't know the first movie, and I was like, did they not speak in all of this? And then I was like, oh no, they're just showing non-speaking things from everything they're showing. It was weird, man. And I, you know what's funny too, and I've seen a few people say this, it's not a super original idea, but watching the first 2 minutes, it felt like, oh, Steven Soderbergh might be doing something here. And then everything after that just felt kind of sad.
Yeah. Sad was it, like, I didn't realize how much I would miss the jokes. You know? Like,
well, just the fun. It's like the jokes are mostly dad jokes, right? So it's not like the jokes necessarily specifically, but it's the, like, atmosphere of fun. And look, I'm not against talking about serious stuff. I just think they made weird choices about how to go about it. And like, as much as I respect the respect they were trying to show by letting people talk, but people took advantage.
Yeah, they sure did. They sure did.
And it was, and I just started skipping at a certain, you know, I started jumping forward at a certain point because I just can't listen to the laundry list of people that a makeup artist wants to thank. No shade.
Right. And if you're not cutting those moments with some sort of levity, whether it be jokes or a song and dance number or a montage. And I, for years I've been like, there's way too many montages. And now I'm sort of reconsidering
or a song, because, right? It just becomes without a bunch
moments,
of people
just, yeah,
you don't
it's
care
really
about.
Ponderous, yeah, you know, yeah, like even agreeing with a lot of the political messages or whatever that are kind of floated. After a while, it's just like it just feels so luxury, and I think that they lost sight of, you know, this is the night that like America celebrates movies, and like there are you know, for a lot of people it's kind of the one night they really think about what the year in movies was like. And if you're just going to make it super serious and ponderous about movies that people haven't seen, of course people are going to be like, eh, do I need this, you know?
Well, and also, and I think we have to accept that not every actor who is good has a great pithy answer for what made you want to be an actor.
Yeah. Or just like that, you know, because you're a great actor doesn't necessarily mean that you're prepared to be the person with the microphone when some of these things happen. Like, right. So that when you have the show end and it's Joaquin Phoenix, who's a tremendous actor, but
not a presenter,
a charitably described uneven public speaker. you know what I mean?
Just not a presenter. Not a presenter. Yeah. He's an interviewee, not an interviewer. Very clearly.
Yeah. And not even he's not even a great interviewee.
No.
So
no. He's a very, very good actor and he sort of seems to live in his own head, and that's fine. But especially when two of your five candidates aren't gonna be there.
Yeah.
Like, you gotta have somebody.
Clearly the leading two on top of that, right? So
yes, this is really crazy. This is really crazy. I can't believe I'm actually going to say this, but because of that thing that you just described, that Joaquin Phoenix is not prepared for that moment, I actually found this ending more uncomfortable than the, you know, the Moonlight.
The La La La, yeah.
La La Land.
Far more. At least, right, in that moment, you had Warren Beatty and Jimmy Kimmel, right?
Yes.
Who were kind of like up there talking to people, explaining it. You know what I mean?
Kimmel at least tried, right? This was – Joaquin Phoenix was literally like, oh, yeah, well, all right, we'll take Tony's Oscar. Good night. I was like, what? What? That's it? The Oscars is over? And then the goofy – the one place there was levity was the voiceover. And then the goofy voiceover lady was like, all right, here comes Oscars After Dark. And I have to say, like, I did not watch Oscars After Dark, but I did see Colman Domingo say Oscars After Dark. And I can imagine, even if that was the best part of the show, it was worth it.
By the way, we didn't even talk about that guy's suit. That's a whole other thing. Hot pink. Yeah. All right. I feel like we've wrapped up our Top Chef coverage.
I think we moved on from Top Chef. I mean, I did kind of want to pick your brain about Oscar stuff. So, you know, I did that a little bit on purpose. It was a tough watch. I think we've said what we need to say.
And I have some quibbles with the choices for sure. I didn't see The Father. It was the one movie I didn't see, I'm going to go watch it. So I'm not complaining about that one.
Okay.
Because I have heard people say that The Happiest is great. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I didn't see it either, and I have no intention to. So if people say that, I'm prepared to accept it.
And I said this when we watched Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, that I thought Chadwick Boseman was very good. Very, very good. But it wasn't my favorite Chadwick Boseman performance. So I'm not like, how dare they? It's... it's shitty for the narrative, so I get why.
Yeah, it's shitty for the narrative, but it doesn't feel disrespectful to the performance.
Exactly. Like, I don't think it was a travesty. It's a little sad that now that he's never going to win one, you know what I mean? But when he's deserving, that's sad.
Yeah.
And people do win Oscars for that reason all the time.
Yeah.
And I get the optics of, old white guy winning. Right, like I get that too, but I think the show on the diversity score, it's really pretty hard to fault the show this year. So
agreed.
I'm not even gonna get into that. I don't know. I don't have a problem with Nomadland winning and winning a lot of things, and Frances McDormand's always great, and she's in every scene of that movie.
Yep.
I liked Carrie Mulligan's performance better.
We both did. But what are you going to do? It's close.
What are you going to do? Yeah. I don't really have any problems with the awards so much. I just don't know. I think the show needed to be better.
Yep.
Just needed to be more show.
And I don't know if it's just they didn't have that much time to put it together, or they're just out of ideas or what. But I would agree that, look, next year's show, I'm sure, will look nothing like this year's show. Whether it looks more like previous year's remains to be seen, but yeah.
Did you see the actual ratings number?
I think it was 10 million.
Under 10 million. It's like nine something.
Yeah. It's
not that different from an episode of Top Chef. You know what I mean?
Or an episode of a big CBS sitcom. I mean, that's the rating that, like, Big Bang Theory probably got on a normal week.
It's half of what Oprah interviewing the Meghan Markle, Prince William thing got. So half.
Yeah, well, I mean, right. Essentially, it is not appointment viewing level of ratings. That's what it is. And that is a desperate collapse if you're looking at the Oscars. So, yeah, they got a lot of work to do.
Yeah, the industry used to call that the Super Bowl for women.
Right, and by the way,
you're at one-tenth of the Super Bowl's audience.
Well, and that's sexist, but it was the Super Bowl for non-sports fans is what they meant to say.
they're advertising people, and they're always thinking in demos. So I get it.
Right, but the point of this is that's how big it was, and it was 100% not this year. So can you get that audience back? I think is an interesting question. But I can say this: I can certainly imagine people tuning in and quickly out from what I watched at the Oscars this year.
Yeah, and I suspect that next year, and that's part of the reason that I brought it up, you're going to see the flop sweat, right? People trying to
dance.
Make sure that you're entertained.
I will. Don't be surprised if they bring Billy Crystal back.
Yeah, God, that would, man.
I mean that.
I really hope they don't.
But. I mean that more figuratively than literally, but
The host thing is the thing that they're going to have to figure out, because I really think that they had decided that they just weren't going to do that anymore because it's been problematic for the last few people they've asked.
Well, okay.
But I think they need to. Or you go with a Kimmel or somebody like that where you kind of know, right?
That's right.
They're already vetted.
It's very baseball-y the way they've handled the host situation. I say this because I've been spending a lot of time over the last couple of weeks talking about how when baseball has a problem, they find a solution to a different problem. and that's sort of what the Oscars have done here, I think, which is they had a problem with vetting. You know what I mean? Like, the problem was we didn't look hard enough at the people we're choosing in the modern world. And we solved that problem by creating a new one, which is we don't have a host at all, and nobody can keep a handle on what's happening or, like, provide levity after something crazy happens. Or, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, they just need – they need a professional broadcaster is what they need.
Right. They need a creative solution, and they took that to mean we have to go way out of the box and reinvent it. You know what I mean?
Right. When really they just needed a good host who's not a dirtbag.
Yeah, they just needed to make a smart pick.
Yeah.
they didn't do that. Jimmy Kimmel did have – I don't know if you caught it, but he did do a pretty funny promo for his show.
Yes.
In the middle where he's
standing outside.
Yeah. He's talking about how he was the last guy to host, and now they don't have a host anymore. That I thought was pretty good. I think there's a good chance he'll be back next year, because I actually think he did a pretty good job.
He is a very good broadcaster. And again, like, you know, this is going to sound ridiculous, but just because Jimmy Kimmel's the guy, like, now he wouldn't pass vetting, okay, but like Adam Carolla would do this perfectly. Like, anyone who is a quality broadcaster could host the Oscars fine. They just don't have those in the Academy for the most part.
I think that given the rise of TV and given the migration of a lot of these things that would be Oscar bait theater movies to streamers.
Yeah.
I just think you're going to see the Golden Globes become more and more important because it covers movies and TV, and it's fun. I think it's generally an easier watch.
Maybe that's what the Oscars needs is more booze.
So yeah, so I don't know if they need to try to take a cue from that and just try to make it looser. Which they seems like they've done some years with the, you know, the selfies and the whatever, you know.
Right. Ellen's not going to pass vetting anymore either though. So
no. She made it a couple years of time though.
Yep. She slid under the final. I don't know what I'm saying, but yeah, she's not doing great image wise. But look, you can find people, and you can vet them to the point where you're pretty safe.
Yep. All right. Let's jump to Rutherford Falls because I gotta get out of here soon. Which is something that we added. Last week, during the week.
Can I
on Peacock? Yeah, go ahead. Hit me.
I want to give you the simplest review I can give to any show that I feel like should give a pretty good idea of where I'm at on it. Are you ready?
Okay.
I enjoyed this show quite a lot, but not enough to purchase Peacock.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Like, I watched the three free episodes, and it's funny. It's definitely got a Parks and Rec feel to it, right? Where you're building this sort of big cast of goofy characters in a small town around a specific issue, which, you know, in Parks and Rec, it started out with the park thing that Leslie was trying to do, right? And in this, it's about Big Larry. And it's funny. It's smart. It's thoughtful for a sitcom. The acting is clever, and there are a lot of interesting characters that, like, I would totally watch the rest. You know, there's seven more episodes, and I'd watch them within the week if they were free, but I'm not buying another streaming service just for this show. I'm just not.
They're not. I have Peacock because I watch Premier League, and it's kind of essential for that. So it wasn't a problem for me, and I did think that they were smart in that they probably, you know, this is not a very cliffhanger-y show, but the closest thing they had to a cliffhanger, they dropped at the end of episode three. So, yep.
No, believe me, like, when episode three ended, I was ready to press play on episode four, but I couldn't. And I wasn't going to pay, you know, whatever, $6 a month to watch it with commercials.
And I would, you know, if I did not pay for Peacock already, I would probably feel the same way.
Yeah.
So So I totally get it. I like the show. I'm enjoying the show. I will finish the show. I think the show has potential to continue to get really good. I like a lot of the characters. It's a little short on laughs for me. Like, it's not absent of laughs. It's sometimes it's clever often and funny sometimes, but it's not Parks and Rec in that department. I'll put it that way.
Well, but Parks and Rec wasn't Parks and Rec in that department in the first season.
Also true. And that's why I said I believe in the potential of it. You know what I mean? Because they're doing some world and character building for sure.
Like, unlike The Good Place, which felt like it very much its own thing from the beginning, this definitely feels like a Parks and Rec template, right?
Yeah.
Like, it feels distinctly like a Parks – down to the song that opens the show. It feels like Parks and Rec was a thing that we did really well. What about a thing in a similar vein with a different cast of characters and problems, right? And it looks like it has the pieces to work. You know, whether it's as good as one of the great sitcoms of the last couple decades, I don't know. But I can't fully endorse a show that I'm not going to watch the entire first season of, but I have nothing bad to say about it after three episodes other than, like, stop it already. This joke has been made so many times, but we are so very close to somebody going with, you know, we could bundle all these streamers together and call it a cably package. A cable-free package, yeah. And then I'll sell it as one bunch for $60 a month. You think anyone will go for that? Like,
yeah. That's happening.
Yeah, and I'm not going to do that.
And it will be more than $60 a month.
That's right. $100 a month. And by the way, when that happens, I'm going to be like, I'm sorry. Like, this is where I jump off of these three streamers because I just don't – I'm not doing that. I'm not doing it again. I'm not getting bamboozled like that all over again.
Well, it's interesting, right? Because, like, part of the issue with the cable, the traditional cable service bundle that was like, you're like, I'm paying for all these channels I'm not watching, right? It's like, at the end of the day,
right.
I watch 15 channels, you know, 20 channels, whatever your number is. It's a small number. And I can't get the cable company to give that to me a la carte. So I'm stuck paying for Fox News and Hallmark Channel and, you know, all these other things that I don't watch. You were also doing that in a streaming bundle, right? But it's more like it just feels different because it's like obviously there's a percentage of the shows on Peacock that you'll watch, relatively small percentage, I would guess, and a bunch that you will never watch. But it doesn't feel like – I don't know. It doesn't feel like the same kind of waste for some reason, you know? Maybe because you just never could watch everything on Netflix even if you wanted to.
Well, I think it depends, right? Like, that's sort of what I'm saying is it does feel like too much of a waste to me with something like Peacock, you know? With Hulu, yeah. When there's 6-7 shows I'm interested in over the last couple years and – also a streaming library that has some old favorites, okay, that makes sense. You know, when it's Paramount Plus that has the entirety of Challenges plus the new All-Stars plus, you know, a couple things my wife watches, like, okay, sure, there's 1,000 things neither of us will watch, but that's worth the $6 a month. You know, and I think that's how people are sort of making their decisions now, right?
Right. Like, well, and that's why sports is becoming the battleground, right? Because I got to have Peacock so I can watch Premier League, and I got to have Paramount Plus so I can watch the Champions League and the Challenge. And then Amazon goes, well, what's my essential sports thing? You know, for them, they're trying to make
it
the
NFL.
But they're – right? Like, so everybody's going to do this so that you feel like you need to have one, right? So that's where we're headed with this.
Well, right. I mean, lucky for me, YouTube TV – lets me watch some Premier League. Certainly not, you know, it's like having a TV instead of the NBA package or whatever. I'm watching basically the TNT games. But that's enough for me at this point in my life, both as a fan and as a sports broadcaster, because we're not talking a lot of Premier League. So, like, this could change for me in the future, but right now, Peacock just doesn't have enough things to draw me in beyond what I can get from my cable and other streamers.
Yeah, there's going to be some winners and losers on that.
And look, Rutherford Falls is never going to be the difference maker in that respect, right? I mean, it's not that kind of show.
Right. So, and there are some good shows on Peacock, but most of them are you can watch on the free version, I think, although maybe that will change.
Yeah, and most of them are TV shows on regular TV, right? There's not a lot of exclusive Peacock content that's elite.
Indeed. All right, and then last but not least, we got Nobody.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I don't have a ton to say about Nobody other than it delivered exactly what I expected, which was Bob Odenkirk, doing, you know, kicking ass, basically. Kicking ass and then delivering the sort of, like, grizzled gravitas that you would, you know, need to make something like that work in between the scenes of Kicking Ass. And I, you know, it's not surprising, but Bob Odenkirk's a legit movie star if he wants to be.
Correct me if I'm wrong. You didn't love John Wick.
I did not. No, I did not love John Wick.
It sounds like you liked this a lot more.
I did. I liked this more than John Wick.
I would say, like, that's not necessarily indicative of things about those two movies as much as it is. Well, that's not true. It's about you and those two movies. I think there's an interesting demarcation between the two. It's a natural comparison in that, you know, a grieved man who you might not think has near superpower levels of killing ability goes berserk because he's, like, offended in some seemingly minor way, right? And escalates a feud with a large group of people to the point where he has to murder all of them. The difference is the star. John Wick is very Keanu Reeves, and Nobody is very Bob Odenkirk. And I love them both, but I think this probably is a better movie in the end. There's a little more to it. Odenkirk is a little more complex. And it's not like, I don't think John Wick took any swings that it missed on, but it just, it never bothered with some of the stuff that Nobody does in terms of complexity, right? So
yeah, that it's between the action scene stuff to me that is, you know, the big difference in those films. Because as you know, my interest in the fighting scenes is fairly fixed,
right?
Is what I would say, right? Like,
it's,
you know,
not
and
zero,
I think a
but
lot of, it's not zero, right? But it's also like there's only so much you're getting out of me with that.
Yep.
And I think that, you know, a lot of the appeal for John Wick for a lot of people is it's simplistic to say the fight scenes, but the realism, I don't know if that's the right word, but like the fact that these are all people kind of, it's the real people doing them and the real, the way that they're shot and that stuff. And like that part of the John Wick experience is not that interesting to me.
Right.
And so that's like, to me, I guess that's sort of the difference. And I just don't like the third one, especially, which, you know, everyone seems to say is the least successful of the Wick movies. Right. That just felt like porno for me with, you know, fighting substituted for fucking. So, you know, like there's like they barely bothered, you know, with the stuff in between.
Yeah.
So it just got very rote for me after a while because I wasn't that interested in the fighting.
Right.
And this.
Right.
This had a lot more to keep me interested. We have talked about this, and I, you know, not knowing exactly what we're going to pot again next. I don't know if that's the time to get into it, but I definitely would like you to watch Banshee, because I've been binging it, and also because it is very much of a piece with both of these movies.
Listen, I think not knowing when we're going to pod next is the perfect time to start watching Banshee for me, because then maybe I can actually get through a few in spare moments before we talk again. So yeah, exclusively for homework, I will start streaming Banshee at some point before we speak again.
Yeah. And I yes. And you, all of you should as well watch a few, for when we talk again.
All right. I think that just about does it.
Yeah, that's a good way to go out. So we'll definitely see you on Thursday and talk challenge then.
Challenge reunion and challenge all-stars, which I continue to believe is ready to step up to the next level. So it'll be a good one Thursday before we take off for a while. Yeah, no homework other than put on Banshee sometime in the next couple weeks. Bye!
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling, and the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.